Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And we had just that over the weekend. The trend continues from the divisional round on to conference championship weekend. The NFL was incredibly giving, and now we got to sort through the wreckage. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and so much to sift through in all of this. An all-time great, maybe saying goodbye, maybe not. We'll wait and see what's going on with TB12 as we get on here throughout the show. We'll look ahead as Super Bowl is now set the upcoming weekend. I should say the upcoming two weekends from now, Super Bowl Sunday will kick off a stage that Chris Canty knows all too well. But Chris, I was amazed coming off the divisional round where we had three games decided by a field goal as time expired, but we had the fourth decided by overtime. We end up getting another round of overtime this weekend and the other game decided by 3 points here. This has to be one of the closer two-week stretches that we've seen in NFL postseason history.
Yeah, I think I heard it from Hembo this morning where he said this was the closest margin of victory when you combine the divisional round games and the championship round games in the history of the NFL. I want to say the margin of victory combined was 21 points with the two weekends, and the next closest weekend, back-to-back weekends that we had like that was something like 41. So that just goes to show you how closely contested these games are. And I think the NFL, with the playoff format that they had, did a good job of these teams being pared down to the very best that they have to offer. And now we're talking about the Bengals and the Rams punching their tickets to the Super Bowl.
College football somewhere absolutely ripe with jealousy over the NFL being able to expand their postseason and get the best out of it the way they did. Because now we sit here and we officially have the Los Angeles Rams set to meet the Cincinnati Bengals. The Rams have opened as 4-point favorites heading into Super Bowl Sunday, Chris. And let's start with them because they were the nightcap yesterday. The NFC matchup with San Francisco that ultimately ended with the Rams win here. Chris, we know they brought this team together for this exact purpose, to get them to this point. Doing it as the 4 seed, probably not what they saw, but what did you learn about this? What did you learn about the Los Angeles Rams in this win this weekend?
Well, what impressed me, Gojo, is that they were able to have success with the ground game early, and I think having that balance was something that paid dividends later on in the game, being able to open up opportunities for shots downfield to Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham Jr., who I thought had an amazing game. He was one of the guys that we talked about on Friday going into this matchup on having to be a key part of what the Rams would have to do in order to have a chance at success. And the fact that he was able to step up and deliver in this spot versus the two previous matchups against the 49ers where he combined for 4 catches for 36 yards, I thought that was a huge difference in terms of the Rams being able to put themselves in position to win that game. But as much as we want to give the Rams credit for being able to come through with the requisite plays that it took, we also got to be critical of what we saw from the 49ers, because there's just no way between the final two possessions where Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan decided they weren't going to even try to run the football, knowing how that led to a disaster. And then the Kwesi Tart dropped interception. To me, those were the two or three biggest sequences that determined how that game would go at the end. It felt like the 49ers had it well within hand. It would look like their kind of game for the first 3 quarters. And just in that 4th quarter, they could not make the plays, offense or defense, in order to find themselves on the winning side of it.
Yeah, this is, speaking of Paul Hembakides, the Greek god of stats here at ESPN, this is another stat I saw pertaining to what you just mentioned. Over the last 3 postseasons, teams that entered the 4th quarter with a 10-point lead were 19-2. Jimmy Garoppolo was the quarterback for both of those losses. And Chris, I know it's a bit reductive to bring it down to that with Jimmy G, but he became sort of the focus going the weekend. Now, a lot of that had to do with comments made by Jeff Garcia and some dumb arguments around that. But overall, with Jimmy Garoppolo, looking at what he's managed to accomplish in his career as a 49er that we believe is likely now done based on what they've done in drafting Trey Lance here, where are we at with Jimmy G's role and what you just mentioned coming off this weekend? Because in my mind, this was a quarterback that, quite frankly, got entered into conversations that he didn't belong in by people that didn't really have a handle on what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And this is the perfect example of trying to dispel the quarterback win stat, because Jimmy G going into yesterday was 35-15 as a starter for the 49ers. And it's clear that he's not a quarterback that should be 20 games over 500. I think that's a product of the supporting cast around him. And it's got to be attributed to what Kyle Shanahan has done, being able to find a workaround when it comes to your quarterback in order to have high-level success and your team being able to do high-level winning. Jimmy G was the passenger. He wasn't a driver in this case for the 49ers. I don't think he was at any point during his tenure there in San Francisco. And so I thought the last two possessions perfectly encapsulated why Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch last spring decided that they were going to invest 3 first-round draft picks to move up to take Trey Lance, because Jimmy Garoppolo is limited when he's in situations that you got to have him put together a drive, where you got to have him elevate the talent around him. I put the tweet out there on social media, Gojo, when the Niners got the ball back, to get it back with a minute 46 to go, down 3 with 1 timeout, had to be an uncomfortable position for San Francisco 49ers fans, and hell, probably for Kyle Shanahan too. And I think what we saw in that final possession is exactly why. Throwing a check down to Jennings on first down absolutely made no sense. It was 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, gets tackled for a loss. It puts you in a bad way. You know, you ultimately end up on third down, turning the ball over and having an interception that seals your fate. But it's just, I didn't understand why Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't being more aggressive in terms of trying to push the ball downfield, because that's what the situation called for. And you want your quarterback to have that level of awareness, especially in the NFC Championship game, knowing what's at stake. But again, to not be able to put together a drive when you had 2 possessions to do so, where a field goal at least, at the very least, puts you into overtime, to not be able to put together something in that spot is an indictment on Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback.
Yeah, but, you know, this is a spot where I always remind people, comparison is the thief of joy, and that's the problem that pops up with Jimmy Garoppolo when you get this far. Because, Chris, we know during the NFL regular season, everyone's got a lot of games to watch. You got a lot of stuff to keep track of. And the further and further we go along, everyone gets more and more eyes on each situation. And Jimmy G has now, as you said, based on that postseason record, been involved in a lot of the games where everyone gets to watch and go through with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, hell, we got to sit here last week and basically go position by position in the matchups heading into conference championship weekend. And once you get to that point, you're compared with people far outside your weight class. And as you said, 49ers fans, people that wanted to defend Jimmy because they thought he was getting beat up when really it was about other people, started to try and make QB wins an outsized part of this conversation, a way it, quite frankly, did not need to be in all of that. And so what you end up with, I think the perfect summary of both quarterbacks in this game and where these two teams were at, Chris, was the first touchdown of the game for each quarterback. Matthew Stafford throws an absolute laser into the cover 2 hole to Cooper Kupp in the back of the end zone, a rocket that I got a text from Dan Orlovsky saying, I would love to know one time in my life what it's like to cut a ball loose like that in a game. It must feel so good. And on the other side, Jimmy Garoppolo's first touchdown pass was a dump-off screen that Deebo Samuel did the vast majority of the work on here. That is the workload for each quarterback, and that's what's asked of each quarterback in this game. And that's why Sean McVay, the head coach for the Rams, got to talk about his quarterback in Matthew Stafford getting to make his first Super Bowl appearance after the game.
I think he's played like he's capable of. You know, risen, I think he's played like we thought he would. And he's, you know, no moment's too big for him. I can tell you that much, Jordan. He's elevating everybody around him. You know, we got one more. We know it's going to be a great challenge. So happy for Zach Taylor and the Bengals. What a tough, resilient group they are. But really so happy for Matthew, Andrew Whitworth. I mean, you know, Aaron Donald, Von. Man, there's just so many guys that I'm just so happy for. Jalen Ramsey. But we got some more work to do.
Kenny and Golic Jr., it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Chris, we know we're going to have time to get to all the rest of these guys. There's some great storylines around this, but Stafford was at the center of all this. He was the one they traded those first-round draft picks for. He was the one that was expected to go out and shake off all the Detroit, come over and be what Jared Goff couldn't be. And whether we can argue for his place up near the top of any all-time pantheons of quarterbacks, Chris, he was exactly what they brought him over here to be for the Los Angeles Rams, and that much we can stamp and say is true now.
Yeah, we can, because he's having the success that in the postseason that we hadn't seen him have success at any other point in his career, certainly not when he was in Detroit when he went 0-3. So the fact that he's been able to come in and in year one being able to take this team on a run, we thought the talent and the ability was there. We felt like the Rams were a quarterback away and that they clearly upgraded in the offseason. But now I think we can feel validated in having that opinion because we're talking about the Rams finally making the Super Bowl. This is a team or an organization that's gone all in on Matt Stafford and this current core of players, and Stafford delivered in the biggest spot. Now, if Tart comes down with that interception, we could be talking about a different outcome, a different level of criticism in terms of the overall roster construction philosophy. But instead, we're talking about some amazing throws that Matt Stafford made. I mean, if you look at the two throws that he made in the drive to tie the game to Odell Beckham Jr., I mean, one play goes for 29 yards, plus you tack on the 15 for the personal foul against Jimmy Ward. And then you look at the go-ahead drive, is a 3rd-and-3 from San Francisco's 37, and it's tight coverage on Cooper Kupp, and Matt Stafford just rips one in there when Jimmy Ward has inside leverage. That's a damn impressive throw, and not a lot of quarterbacks can make it, but Matt Stafford is one of the handful of guys that has the arm talent to pull it off. So the fact that he can make those throws is why they decided that they were going to ship 2 first-round draft picks that they didn't even have. They had to ship future first-round draft picks to the Detroit Lions in order to bring over Matt Stafford, and now that's paying dividends. So congrats to Stafford because he's finally having an opportunity to play on the biggest stage the NFL has to offer. But I think this is also a congratulations in order for Les Snead and Sean McVay for being able to snap that streak of losing games to the San Francisco 49ers and to get this team back to the Super Bowl.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no contract, no compromise. We'll get to more of what you just mentioned, a streak, trends, the idea that maybe what we saw from the Rams can lead to more copycats of this, because this is now 2 years in a row we've seen a team do this and that team end up hosting the Super Bowl in their home stadium. We should probably check and see where the Super Bowl is next year. But coming up next, I will give you one of the more improbable sentences of our lifetime, one that was a ton of fun to get to utter over and over again as we got to Sunday afternoon. We'll get to that in 30 seconds after this word from Wendy's. Now, guys, this is your Wendy's wake-up call. Get a better breakfast at Wendy's when you buy any breakfast sandwich and get any size drink for free. Fresh brewed coffee, free. Diet Coke, free. Vanilla Frosty Chino, hell yeah, free. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and buy your Wendy's breakfast sandwich, and then get any size drink in a Wendy's cup for free. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours. Offer cannot be combined with any other mobile offer, not valid for third-party delivery orders.
I have not seen the Bengals this far since I was in the 5th grade. And I'm 43 now.
And what the Bengals did today was they took the Kansas City Chiefs to the litter box and covered them up.
This is the biggest Cinderella story of my life. This does not feel real. I can't say that enough. It doesn't feel real.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and the sentence that I wasn't sure I was going to get to say in my lifetime: the Bengals are in the Super Bowl. Like, Chris, we got to stop and drink that in right now, because the Bengals have joined the Bengals and then two other teams from the past as only 4 teams to ever reach the Super Bowl following a 4-win season. And now they're finally here. That was a game, Chris, that the more and more I look back watching it again, I still can't quite make sense of how Cincinnati managed to pull this off. Was this more Cincinnati Bengals win or just epic collapse from Andy Reid and the Chiefs on the other side? Because it stinks of both.
Yeah, and I would say it's probably more collapse. And I don't want to take credit away from what Joe Burrow and the Bengals did. But, I mean, the way that Pat Mahomes and that Chiefs offense opened the game, there pretty much wasn't any drop-off, any let-off from where they closed out the divisional round matchup against the Buffalo Bills. Gojo, they had went 6 consecutive possessions with scoring touchdowns if you go back to that divisional round matchup, and they were well on their way to boat racing the Cincinnati Bengals right up until that possession before halftime where they decided with 5 seconds left that they didn't want to kick a field goal and that they were going to make a try for the end zone. Now, listening to Pat Mahomes in the post-game press conference, he said they were looking for something over the middle, and if it wasn't there, he was supposed to throw it out of the end zone. Instead, he checked it down to Tyreek Hill. We know how that movie ended with Eli Apple making a tackle. But that tackle that Apple made, ended up being all the confidence that the Bengals needed going into halftime to feel like they had a shot in the second half. And I just felt like if you took the points, if you took the field goal and went up 14 as opposed to having an 11-point deficit, which was the same exact deficit at halftime in their Week 17 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals, the Chiefs would have been in a much better spot. And I think the psyche of the Cincinnati team is in a different place as well. So the fact that you didn't come away with points on that drive after you got points on every single other drive you had in the first half, I felt like that was the beginning of the end for the Kansas City Chiefs. And credit to Lou Anarumo and that defense. They shut the faucet off. They didn't let the Kansas City Chiefs offense sustain drives, created a couple of takeaways. So we'll give them credit for that. But that meltdown, I feel like the Kansas City Chiefs are more responsible for it than the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, Chris, we've seen and heard of the game plan to shut down this Kansas City Chiefs team, or at least come close on offense, playing a lot of shell coverage here, dropping people back. And that's what the Bengals did all day. They dropped eight guys into coverage. They rushed three, maybe four. But Chris, they did that in the first half as well as the second half. What we saw was Patrick Mahomes really play poorly for one of the very few times in his career. The defense deserves some credit for that, but we saw some of the attempted same magic from Pat in the second half that we got in the first half that had him in the first half, three touchdown passes and a QBR of 98. He became the only quarterback with four conference championship games involving at least three touchdown passes from that quarterback. That's what he accomplished in the first half, only to go to the largest drop-off between halves and QBR of any quarterback in postseason history. His second half QBR was 1.4. And Chris, that's something that, you know, all the rest of this we're going to find very inventive ways to say. Patrick Mahomes seemed to press. So much of the story of this season was about him learning to be patient, this offense learning to be patient. And in the second half, that looked like a quarterback that was constantly chasing something that he just couldn't find.
And Gojo, we talk about this all the time on this show. Sometimes you have to protect the player from themselves. And that was one of those instances where Andy Reid has got to step up and protect Pat Mahomes from himself. I get it. Your players want to be aggressive in that situation. They want to go for the touchdown all the time. They want to go for every fourth down. But you have to understand time and score situation. You also have to have a feel of the game, feel the heartbeat of the game. And to me, getting points on that last possession right before halftime, that would have been the difference in being up two touchdowns and feeling like you can control the complexion of the second half, utilizing the run game, the short passing game. But instead, you open the door for this Kansas City Chief, I mean, for the Cincinnati Bengals to feel like they could get back in that game, knowing that it was 11 points as opposed to a two touchdown lead. And that was all that Joe Burrow and company needed. Now, you got to give credit to Joe Burrow because in that second half, the dude balled, man, just being able to come up with some big-time plays, especially on third downs. Gojo, that go-ahead score that they had in the fourth quarter on that possession, you're talking about him coming up with two big-time scrambles for first downs on that possession on third downs. Those were huge plays. I mean, the completion that he made to T. Higgins for 16 yards to move him in the field goal range. Like, Joe Burrow routinely came up with the plays that his team needed in those situations. And that's one of the things that I don't think people give him enough credit for. Being great in situational football, like that matters. And so Joe Burrow came up with some great plays, and you got to credit also Joe Mixon for coming up with some big runs as well down the stretch. And that Cincinnati Bengals team, that's going to be a force to be reckoned with. Like they keep saying they're not done yet, and you got to look at the swagger from their quarterback and how that's infected the entire locker room there. And you listen, man, you got to buy into this team because they did what no other team was capable of doing before, which is to force the Kansas City Chiefs to blow a 15-point lead at home. It's never been done before. We haven't seen it before until yesterday, and that's attributed to Joe Burrow and this Bengals outfit.
You mean this swagger from Joe Burrow?
I've got to ask about the jewels. Are they real, and what are they? And did you sense an opening at the end of the first half when the Chiefs didn't get at least 3 points?
They're definitely real. I think I make too much money to have fake ones, so, you know, these are real. I'm sorry, what was the second question?
Hey, who cares? I can't believe that guy had the audacity to ask a second question when we need to just clear out space, call ISO, and get ready for Swaggy Joe Burrow, who, by the way, could become the first person to be a national champion, Heisman Trophy winner, and Super Bowl champion. Chris, that is the dripping, unparalleled confidence of Joe Burrow that allows him to be whatever the situation calls for, like you said. And to be wealthy enough to go out here and just live in the truth on that. No problem with that.
Gojo, I think Joe Burrow might be the single biggest agent of change an NFL team has seen since Pat Mahomes was drafted in 2017. The turnaround, this team had the number one pick 2 years ago, and now they're in the Super Bowl. And the fact that it's the Cincinnati Bengals, which is a notoriously cheap organization led by Mike Brown, the fact that they've been able to retool this thing on the fly with the roster that's still rebuilding, they're in the Super Bowl. You got to give credit to Joe Burrow, man. Forget about what the stacks look like. You can't quantify his impact on this team and what they've become. The dude is just special. The guys on the team were taking shots in the locker room after the game, Gojo, with full confidence that they knew that they would be in that spot. That is incredible to believe. The fact that Kansas City has never lost under Pat Mahomes, has never lost a home playoff game outside of the one they lost in Pat Mahomes' second full season as a starter to Tom Brady. The fact that this was the game against a second-year quarterback in the Cincinnati Bengals, it's just crazy, man. I can't say enough positive things about what they've done and what kind of quarterback Joe Burrow is.
Well, we got 2 weeks to do that, so we will find out if we can say enough positive things about Joe Burrow, the Rams, and the matchup that we have set coming off conference championship weekend. Rams hosting the Super Bowl at SoFi against the Cincinnati Bengals. But coming up next, speaking of someone that we have run out of superlatives for, if this really is the end for the greatest to ever do it, what comes next for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the rest of that team? We'll get to that here next. Candy and Golo Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
People say, what do you want to do after football? And I'm like, what do you mean after football? There's nothing after football. This is what, you know, I was born to do, and this is what I enjoy doing more than anything else.
Breaking news, Tom Brady is retiring after 22 spectacular seasons in the NFL.
It's on the Mount Rushmore of all-time great athletes.
Someone who was a six-round draft pick to winning seven Super Bowl rings. The greatest and most accomplished quarterback to play the game of football.
Listen, I think I speak for everyone who rooted for a non-Patriots AFC East team, the Atlanta Falcons, and as of last weekend, the Los Angeles Rams. We're all going to wait a good long time before we think we're clear of Thomas Edward Patrick Brady here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, because this weekend, in the midst of conference championship weekend, Chris, we had the report from Adam Schefter and from Jeff Darlington, our ESPN NFL insiders, that Tom Brady was hanging it up after 22 years. And since then, it has been a wild ride. I am currently looking at an NFL Live two-hour special partially dedicated to Tom Brady and this news here. I mean, we've seen Tom Brady and his camp come back out through his father and others and push back on all of this. Chris, it only seems right that a career like no other would have a potential retirement like no other.
Yeah, because you're talking about the most accomplished player in NFL history. So we'll see what happens. And I know everybody's looking forward to hearing from Tom Brady himself, talking to us about the decision to shut it down. But until we get to that point, man, I think we also got to reflect on what this decision could potentially mean for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and where they're at. Because, Gojo, the news would fit in line with the things that we've heard coming out of the Buccaneers organization the last couple of weeks, saying that they would do their due diligence on free agent quarterbacks and looking at quarterbacks in the draft, exhausting all avenues when it came to potentially having to find a replacement for Tom Brady. So it makes sense. And then you couple that with the fact that you have Byron Leftwich, the play caller, offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as one of the favorites for a head coaching vacancy that's out there. It just seems like it would be the time, if Tom Brady is considering shutting it down, if it's going to happen over the course of the next calendar year, this would be a natural opportunity to. I just look at it from this standpoint. He's a top competitor, and the fact that they lost in the divisional round to the LA Rams in the way that they did and how close it actually was, I just that would be tough to have that as the last memory of Tom Brady on an NFL field. But it does get to a point for every single player where you realize you can't do it anymore, and there are other things that have to be factored in. And from Tom Brady, it feels like the family aspect of things are weighing heavily when it comes to this decision.
Yeah, hard to count those things out as we try and digest all of this. So just to give people, again, the latest on what we've heard out of our side here, Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL Insider, joined Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning and gave the latest on Tom Brady's pending retirement.
I think you heard him talk on his Let's Go podcast with Jim Gray last week. I think it was pretty clear there about spending more time with his family, about giving them some of the time that they deserve. They've made sacrifices for him, and I feel like it sounds like he feels like he wants to make sacrifices for them. I think that we all go through our own professional and personal journeys, and I just think that he feels like it's time to move forward now.
And Chris, just to give everyone the full clear picture on how chaotic this has been since this first report from Adam Schefter, after the report comes out, Tom Brady Sr. tells ESPN in a text that Tommy has made no such determination regarding his playing future. Then we had Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians tell our ESPN Bucs reporter Jenna Lane that Brady had not notified him of or the team of his plans to retire. Then Mike Evans deleted his tweet thanking Brady. Chris Godwin deleted his tweet thanking Brady. Like, Chris, even the people closest to him in this situation seemed, one, willing to celebrate Tom Brady, willing to think, all right, this is something we always knew was possible with an aging quarterback, but also for Bruce Arians and this team to go out here and refute that. I think the interesting part of this, for the reason you mentioned, Chris, I think however this ends, whether it's with Brady coming back or if Brady actually is going to follow through and retire here, which wouldn't surprise me all that much given what we've heard, I think there is probably a desire by everyone involved based on what this relationship was in Tampa to make sure they do this in a way that everyone is comfortable with and prepared for. Because I'm sure Tom wants to leave that organization, one that took him in after that and helped him get to another Super Bowl and win it, wants to leave them in the best position possible.
No doubt about it. But also Tom Brady not wanting to upstage the NFL playoffs as well, right? I mean, him retiring would essentially hijack what's going on around the National Football League and highlighting the very best teams this given season. And so I don't think that Tom Brady would want that to come out around this time. And so you're right. I could absolutely see a world where Brady does shut it down, but he just wants to pick the right time and space in order to do that while also affording the Tampa Bay Buccaneers enough runway to find a succession plan for him. But I think that's the interesting aspect of all of this. Where do the Bucs pivot if Brady does indeed retire? Because it doesn't feel like they necessarily have a plan to immediately replace him. If they feel like they've got to do due diligence on the free agent quarterbacks that are out there, then how much confidence do they actually have that Kyle Trask can step in as the full-time starter next season? I don't know that they're there. So I think that will become the interesting part of this, because this is a team, this is a roster that's ready to win right now. So I think that's also a big part of what Jason Light and Bruce Arians have got to figure out if Brady decides he's going to step away. So I think that's also a part of this. And then there's also some of the business stuff with Tom Brady. He's due a roster bonus in February. Like, there's also that aspect of it. What are they going to do with that piece? But yeah, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback vacancy potentially could be one of the more interesting storylines throughout the 2022 offseason.
Oh, it would immediately vault, I would imagine, at or near the top of the teams that we talk about in the market for a lot of these veterans, and likewise become maybe the most desirable landing spot of any of the places that we've mentioned in all of this. And all of that is a reason why I think Tom making the decision this quickly wouldn't be all that far-fetched, wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. Understanding, we heard Aaron Rodgers say, I know my decision impacts a lot of people, but we know that this relationship between organization player is actually a good one, where that might actually proceed at a timeline that really would benefit the organization, not just be something said out loud. So we'll have plenty more time to get into this. Like I said, we're running a special on it on NFL Live right now. This conversation is not going away now that we have blood in the water around the greatest football player of all time potentially hanging them up. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes bundling easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your car, home, motorcycle, commercial, auto, and more. All your protection right in one place. Bundle and save at progressive.com. But coming up next, we couldn't get out of this NFL weekend without reigniting the best bit of controversy that we have seen this postseason. Did one debate finally get put to bed for good? Of course not. We'll do that next here. Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
That sound you heard is Jordan Cornette, ESPN Radio host, co-host of Sports Nation here on ESPN. That is the sound of him walking, yelling, screaming, banging pots and pans as he enters ESPN's campus up here. He's going to join us on Canty and Golic Jr. in about 10 minutes here. Chris, he is the premier Bengals fan of ESPN. I said we should let him host part of every show for the next 2 weeks around here. Just a full-blown takeover, because Cincinnati should not act like they have been here before at all. I already have people on Twitter correcting how I say Bengals versus Bengals.
Stop
they have
it.
Begun the takeover now, Chris.
Stop it, man. They can't already be at it, Gojo. It can't have already gotten to that level where they're poking their chests out to the point where they want to correct your pronunciation. You wouldn't imagine folks from Ohio would be real big sticklers when it came to that. I'm just saying, like, everybody's giving your team props. Everybody's giving you your flowers. You're going to the Super Bowl. Just be happy about that. Don't start nitpicking and talking about you pronounce the word Bengals a certain way. I don't want to hear that mess. Enjoy your team going to the Super Bowl, because it's been a really long time since you could say you're a Bengals fan and be proud of that.
Listen, I had to listen to my buddy Kyle Rudolph, who is a West Side of Cincinnati guy, Elder High School alum, call bagels bagels for 5 years. Kyle, I love you. That's not how the word's pronounced here. So if I say bangle a few times instead of bangle, Cincinnati, I apologize on the way in. I love you guys. I love Graders and Skyline. I am with you. We'll do the damn thing. So
Well, you're a better man than me, Gojo, because I'm absolutely not going to apologize if I'm saying bangles wrong.
You know what? The good news is I think you very naturally got it right here. Chris, this is what happens yet again when your quarterback is out here in the post-game press conference being asked questions about the validity of his diamonds.
I've got to ask about the jewels. Are they real, and what are they? And did you sense an opening at the end of the first half when the Chiefs didn't get at least 3 points?
They're definitely real. I think... I make too much money to have fake ones, so, you know, these are real. I'm sorry, what was the second question?
I think we officially have to dub them the new money Bengals, Chris.
Listen, I love the swag that Joe Burrow showed up to Arrowhead with. We're talking about the chain, but nobody's talking about the stunner shades he walked in with, too. I mean, the fact that he's doing all that in a situation where you probably don't need sunglasses, that he had those shades on, that just speaks to the swag that this kid plays with, man. And everybody on this team is energized by that. And while we were all saying that the Cincinnati Bengals should just be happy to be here in year two, they won the division, they're a playoff team, it's clear that they have greater aspirations. And now you're finding them in the Super Bowl. And Gojo, I got to say this, man, when we start looking at the weapons on both sides of this thing, I would probably lean toward the Cincinnati Bengals, just like I lean toward the Bengals going into their matchup against the Chiefs. This is a really special team, man, and they believe in one another, and I think they're playing above the X's and O's. This is a team that some is greater than its parts, because there's no way they should find themselves in the Super Bowl with an offensive line as bad as the Bengals' offensive line is. Although they were really good yesterday, only allowing one sack.
Yeah, Joe Burrow's going to walk into the Super Bowl having been sacked 62 times. That is 12 more than the next closest quarterback who has entered the Super Bowl in any year prior. So he's been beat the hell up. But Chris, you mentioned that unwavering confidence in those weapons allowed them to do a lot of the impossible, including maybe end the overtime debate around the NFL. God love Sean Payton, the former New Orleans Saints coach, for already getting in on the Twitter fun. He tweeted out, OT rules will change guaranteed if the Chiefs score this TD on the first drive, because we had another overtime situation. We had the Kansas City Chiefs go out there and win the coin toss, and we thought, coming into that game in the NFL postseason, teams that have won the coin toss in this overtime format were 10-1. And yet somehow the Bengals were able to go out there and give every person who argued in favor of defense their ammunition. They made it happen, Chris. I still think the points stand in all of this, but defenders of defense in this overtime got what they wanted from the Bengals defense.
Yeah, thank God the Bengals defense, Jesse Bates III and Von Bell, spared us from an offseason of 6 months, 7 months, just talking about the overtime rules and how they needed to be addressed by the competition committee. I'm glad that that's not going to be the dominant talk around the NFL just because, you know, you saw in this overtime that the Bengals were able to find a way. Their defense got a stop, created a short field, and their offense capitalized on it with a field goal. So thank God they saved us from a conversation that I was getting tired of only after a week.
Sean Payton, knowing a thing or two about big-time playoff games, changing rules the following year, already giving us the goods. Coming up next, we will get the goods from ESPN's premier Bengals fan and find out just how much confidence he is ready to swagger out to Los Angeles with. Next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.